Thank you, Ross.
And thank you, everybody, for indulging me on this night of open lines. I guess you could say they are slightly less than fully open lines. In the, I just want to talk about the security thing for just a little while, because there's some things I get and things I don't get. I want to thank Dr. Andrew Kolarik for getting us started last hour. Informative, and I'm sure will reoccur here in this conversation. Many of these ideas that he's talking about that he just said just before the top of the hour, particularly, that it seems like there's all these things that are waiting for the right opportunity to be manifested. And then when they are, we may not even know yet why we are manifesting them. We may not even be told why. And that's the separation of this and where I'll get started coming up next. The difference between the they and the us on this subject. And then we'll see if you can help sort it out with me or for me. I will be the first to confess I am the dumbest guy I know. But that's why I'm going to count on you. Coming up next on Coast to Coast AM, in for George, this is Ian Punnett. Did I just walk back in the nick of time or what? Just out there collecting a thought and came in, started hearing the piano bang and grabbed the microphone and I'm on. Thank you for everybody for holding on for just a second. We'll get to more open lines on Coast to Coast AM in a second. Here's what I get and here's what I don't get about the last 48 hours of security headlines. What I get, the plot has been thwarted. Right. 21 people arrested, thwarted, meaning ended, finished, done, in the can. We got this one. People arrested who were both British and Pakistani. I guess we don't know yet a whole lot about the 21 people, you know, people in Britain arrested Pakistanis, people in Pakistan arrested some Brits. Yay, team. 21 people thwarted, plot thwarted. But if the plot was truly thwarted, of course, why did the threat level go up? If it was thwarted, if it was finished, they said, ah, got this one over. Then why did we go up to red for the first time ever? If the plot was stopped, why start to confiscate fluids then? If the terrorist plot to bring fluids or gels onto a plane and mix them together to form a bomb, which would be ignited by a flash camera to take down a plane, if that were the case, then why start to confiscate the fluids now? I mean, last week, sure. I mean, when they had the first inkling that something like this was happening, start confiscating the fluids then, quietly, perhaps, maybe even publicly. You just start telling people, oh, you know, we have a little bit of a question about fluids on planes. We're going to stop that for a while. But why start it afterward, right? I don't get that. What I get, I get that all of these planes were coming to us. This terrorist plot was stopped in England before it arrived. I got that. But then why stop the planes that are flying domestically from being able to have passengers with fluids on them? I mean, if the terrorist plot was this very specific thing about blowing planes up from London to New York, then why are they stopping people flying from San Francisco to Sacramento from bringing on toothpaste? I don't get it. And for that matter, I mean, if you're going to be flying from, you know, Oklahoma City to Dallas and you're bringing on mouthwash, why is that okay? Or to, you know, make somebody throw out, why is it all right to say that person's got to throw out the mouthwash, but baby formula or breast milk is not okay? That one they said, no, that can go on. As though the terrorists, if such terrorist activity existed between Dallas and Oklahoma City, that those terrorists would somehow draw the line at breast milk or formula? that they wouldn't say, well, you know, I do this in the name of my God, and they bring the breast milk or they take a baby on with them. It just doesn't make any sense. Why tell the terrorists we accept breast milk and formula? When it seems to me that if you're going to have no fluids, you got to have no fluids. I don't want moms to bring on babies without being able to feed them. Believe me, I got to fly too. And I certainly sympathize for the parents out there, but it just doesn't make any sense. If those fluids are okay, then why not the mouthwash? And if somebody says, well, because the parents can test the baby fluid, they have to show right there. They have to drink the breast milk or they have to drink the baby formula in front of the guards and show that they're okay. Well, then why can't they do that with the mouthwash? Why can't they do it with other fluids? It just doesn't make any sense. And for that matter, if there were five people that, as I heard the story, was that five people got away and that they weren't sure of their whereabouts, then why not tell us that right away? Well, we arrested 21, but five got away. So until we catch those five, no fluids. And then when we catch those fives, then we'll make a determination on whether or not there'll be any more fluids. That makes sense. Why not tell us straight away that five more got away? They're on the loose and there's a real threat, instead of telling us that it's thwarted and it's done and then raise the threat level without telling us why. What I get, I mean, I get that five got away, right? So that's why they have no more liquids. But why food? Why take food away? Why say somebody can't bring on a hamburger that they just bought in the terminal, you know, just yards away from where the gate entrance is? Why not? What's the logic of that? If the specific threat was to blow up planes, by the way, focused on three particular airlines, you know, why blow up? Why tell people they can't bring a hamburger onto a plane that they bought at the terminal right by the gate? Now they say, well, because they don't want people bringing food from home. That's fine. Then stop all food going into the airport. No food beyond the checkpoint. You could eat a salad outside, but as soon as you go through the checkpoint, no salad can come with you. But on the other side of the checkpoint, shouldn't you be able to buy stuff there? Can't they check the perfume for sale in the gift shops there at the airport? But if they suspect that people at the airport would be sneaking nitroglycerin on the shelves of the perfume shop that's inside, you know, the gift section of the airport, then why not tell us that? Tell us we don't have a full grip yet on whether or not somebody has found a way to sneak liquids into the terminal. We just don't know. Why not tell us? Why not arm us with that information? Right? I mean, I get, you know, why they are stopping people from using toothpastes and gels and liquids. If you're going to say, okay, look, we're just going to do this for a while until we find the rest of the guys. No toothpaste, no gels, no liquids. Fine. It's a temporary thing, but we're going to do that. But then if you're going to say that, are we really prepared to say that this answers specifically to the threat in England? Can't we just come out and say it really doesn't have anything to do with the terrorist threat there? Because that was stopped. It's just, we believe that this is the future. And just come right out and say that. The future of all airline flight is no more liquids or gels. And it really doesn't have anything to do with raising the terrorist level to red. It's just something we've been thinking about doing anyway, and now seems like a good time. Okay, just come out with it. That you can't fly from Peoria to Louisville, you know, anymore with your own toothpaste. From Albany to Rochester, right? You can't, from now on, you have to buy everything, you know, when you get there, or pack it and ship it in the, you know, and that's the only way you'll be able to get it. You can't bring anything on board. Okay, just come out and tell us why. And then the whole, back to the no food thing. What's that really about? I mean, are they going to be selling us food on the flights? I mean, they're going to say, you're going to have some liquids. You're going to have some food. Now they're going to stop us from bringing any on. Is it, I hate to sound so jaded. Is it only to sell us food when we get there? Is it to create another revenue stream? I don't want to think that. But I have to ask this question. If they don't have the security to guarantee that the Happy Meal you buy in the terminal McDonald's, just 20 yards away from the gate of the plane you're about to get on. If they don't have the confidence that somehow a hamburger there in that McDonald's might be laced with explosives and brought onto a plane, if they don't have the confidence that they have the security that can stop them from bringing a loaded hamburger onto a plane, then why do they think they've got the security that can stop somebody from sneaking an explosive on through the food that you would buy once you're on the plane? And then we get into a whole thing about, what about the kosher meals? What about halal? What about the people who have restricted diets? Are they going to now start offering all of those people food too? And at what cost? And that's just where some of my questions begin. But it's not where the solution is for me. The solution for me is not just more questions. It's a demand that we have answers. And I ask, and I wonder where you are with this, and we'll go to the phones coming up in just a second, but I'm asking here for the people who are in charge of our nation's security to not treat us like children. Don't treat us like rubes who can't handle nuanced information. We have proven that we can handle it. I mean, I know they don't like to tell us everything, but if you really think about it, the us have been the only ones to really stop terrorists in their tracks. When we're armed with all the information we need, us have done pretty well. That is to say, the average person, the average man or woman, when they know what to look out for, when they know what the threat is, what the real problem is, us do just fine. You look at 9/11, when us, the average passenger, broke FAA rules and started using cell phones on planes, us found out what was happening. And that's why there was a further tragedy averted by the self-sacrificing, profound, and heroic acts of the passengers in that flight over Pennsylvania. That was an us thing. There were no air marshals on that flight. There were no people representing the military on that flight. That was us. And when us had enough information, us responded just fine. You look at the shoe bomber. Now, they knew that there was some plot about somebody using shoes to blow up a plane. We know that now, that they knew that then. But they didn't tell us. Still, yet, it was an us that figured out there was something weird about a guy trying to light his shoes on fire. And he was smart enough to know that this is wrong. Hey, let's stop him, A, and then B, let's bring in some other people to figure out what's going on instead of finding out afterward. And I think that that's what this is all about, the us of it. They still don't believe that us can handle it. They still don't believe that if they tell us what's happening, that we won't freak out, that we won't form like on-plane vigilante packs to go around and harass passengers. Us haven't yet. You know, we can, if you can tell us what to look out for, we can do that. You want to tell us to look out for people mixing chemicals on a plane? We can do that. Tell us, and us will look around. We'll keep our eyes open. We'll let you know. But don't keep all the information limited to just some secret they. Because when that happens, they do it at their own peril. Or should I say, at our own peril. It was H.L. Mencken who said, the whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and hence clamorous to be led to safety by menacing it with an endless series of hobgoblins, all of them imaginary. Well, I don't believe that's true in this case. Terrorism is real. Terrorists are a real threat to us. It is not imaginary. But what is true about that is this sense that somehow we, us, can only be saved by them. And we can do pretty good on our own. I'm reminded of Ralph Waldo Emerson, who said, the wise man in the storm prays to God, not for safety from danger, but deliverance from fear. And that's just where we need to be right now. More information we have, the less fear. And I think if we have less fear, we will do more things right. So that's where I am with this. Those are some of my questions, but I'll open up the floor to other people to speak on it when it comes to our security and us and them and east of the Rockies. Rex is hanging on Coast to Coast AM for open lines. Get us started here, Rex.
Okay. You know, my father, long departed father, told me years ago, he said, just remember this, son. He says, the world is run by C students.
Yeah, well, that could be a good thing, though.
That could be a good thing, though. Let me have my say here. I'm an ex-Air Force intelligence officer, and I've got my PhD in bureaucratic decision-making and decision-making theory. That everything bureaucracies do is ham-fisted, basically. As my father used to say, there's the right way, there's the wrong way, and then there's the Army way. So you've got to expect a certain ham-fistedness in all of this to begin with. The second problem is that there's a French sociologist named Crozier who did a study of the French post office back in the late 60s, early 70s, and what he found out was, France being a highly centralized system of government, is that the people with all the information at the fire line, they had all the information, but they didn't have any authority, and the people that had all the authority had no information.
Okay, so, well, this is good, but, you know, I want to...
Well, that's the problem that we have here, number one.
Wait. Hold on a second. Stop. Let me establish something right away so we don't do this all night. I'm so great on a conversation. And if you want to have a conversation that's so cool, and you've said so many interesting things, but I don't want to just turn this into, like, a lecture where you grab the wheel and keep going for a while. Because I have things I want to... Okay, it's not a matter about asking you a question. I just want to stop in and say, okay, now make this relevant to what we're talking about. I understand all these things are true, great quotes, wonderful.
Well, all right, let me, your previous guest on, he said you have to disseminate the decision-making capability, okay?
Right.
He made that point, and I fully agree on that. The other thing about databases, I might point out, I think it's very dangerous, and I agree with him, to have master databases, because once you get on the inside of those master databases, then you're golden. Okay?
Right.
I much prefer segmented databases that are hard to access even by your own people.
Well, that's
because if it's hard for your own people to access them, it's going to be even harder for the bad guys.
Well, I appreciate that comment and for getting us started, and thank you so much. I will go back to what he said at the beginning there when Rex said the world is being run by C students. That may be true, but I don't know that that's wrong. You know, I don't know that that's something that needs to be corrected. There's an elitism that says, well, the dumb ones are running the world. I don't think that's true. I think there's lots of A-minded people who get C work in college because they're too busy socializing. And I think that there's a reason why a lot of C students do well in politics is because they're the social ones. They went to the parties. They got drunk. They had fun. They lived life a little bit. I think it's, you know, we can't just be sitting around thinking that this is some meritocracy where only the people who get a certain GPA should be in charge of anything. You know, if they were so smart, they could run and win. Somehow they lack the social skills to win. So I don't know that we can hold it against the C students who are better at the glad handing. Maybe the emphasis should be here on more A students learning how to have more fun and get along better with others. We'll go west of the Rockies. Chris is hanging on Coast to Coast AM. Chris?
Yes.
All right, so where do you go with this topic?
I have a friend that's working security in an airport, and he stated to me that pretty soon that they're creating testing devices that will actually test foods and fluids that will be able to go on the planes.
And, so we will be able to bring on our own, or they would be able to bring on food for us?
We will be able to bring our own. It will run through a series of scanners and testing devices that actually dip stuff in the fluid or food to actually test for different properties that are, you know, consumed as explosives.
Okay. Very good. I appreciate that. And thank you. You know, he brings up the point about consumed explosives. What's to stop a terrorist now from having some explosive and then going into the bathroom and taking it out when you get on the plane? What's more likely, a terrorist sneaking out a bomb and a hamburger or that? All right, we'll get back to this. More of your open line calls, sorting out the last 48 hours of security headlines on Coast to Coast AM in for George. This is Ian Punnett. Nobody could say it better than you, Ross Mitchell. And the lines are jammed. And we're jamming on this open night line, too. We'll get to everybody here coming up in just a second. I want to get I want to restate something though. Let's make sure it stays a conversation, and I really want to hear what you all have to say. I'll just restate my position again quickly, and then go to the break and jump right back onto the phones. And that's this: the more information we have, the better off we are as a country. Dr. Andrew Kalerick said it last hour. We're a country that's designed from the bottom up. And we work best when the bottom has as much information as it needs to stay safe. Nobody from the FAA called those people in that plane over Pennsylvania and said, 9/11 is happening. Nobody called. They called out and they figured out on their own what to do, what the right thing was to do. Nobody told the people sitting around the shoe bomber that, oh, by the way, you know, somebody might do it on a shoe. They figured it out. And the more information we have that there is a threat, the more things we have to look out for, the better we will do. So a little more information here, please. And tie some of these threads together for all of the stuff that we have to do, all the freedoms we have to give up, like even so much as bringing food on a plane. Explain why. And if there is no explanation, then what explanation do you see in it? You can help fill in those blanks. Coming up next on Coast to Coast AM, in for George, this is Ian Punnett. Letting the open lines rip all across North America on Coast to Coast AM. John is on the first-time caller line on Coast to Coast AM. John, where are you with all these security changes?
I think they're really bogus. And a person has been on Coast to Coast and writes for 911truth.org. He has been saying that it's not a question of whether the terrorism is imaginary, but who's behind it, and that this is really an inside job to justify the long-standing plans for massive war against the Middle East and police state measures at home. And, you know, Mr. Jones has made a very rare prediction. Before 9/11, the summer before 9/11, he gave out details based on his research that the Trade Towers were going to be attacked in New York City by aircraft. He told everyone to call the White House to tell them do not perpetrate this inside job terrorist attack, which you will blame on Osama bin Laden. And it happened anyway. He says he has the very same information, gut feelings, and other sources that if we do not alert the public, we are in very grave danger of another major terrorist attack to justify an attack against Iran, Syria, and to justify full-scale martial law in this country. And people even like Daniel Ellsberg and Reagan officials have said much the same thing.
I appreciate that comment. Thanks so much. And a couple other people had emailed in about Alex Jones's theories on this, too. Let's get to Hassan on the wild card line on Coast to Coast AM. Hassan?
Yes.
All right. So tell me where you are with all of these new changes. Because of the supposedly stopped plan from London to the United States, then you can't bring a hamburger on a flight from Bozeman, Montana to Wyoming. I don't get it.
Well, you know, I don't know. I hope I'm trying to tie the threads here. I'm listening to everything you're saying, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying. But one thing that gets me is that this one-dimensional profiling, and there are many Middle Eastern people that have blonde hair, and blue eyes, and green eyes, and light hair,
okay.
And they decided they wanted to have a shave or eat a few Big Macs. Maybe the machines wouldn't be able to detect the food they had the day before them, or something like this. And it just really gets me. I think, you know, it's always the there's an olive-skinned guy, and maybe watch out for the people that are
right. That
are dark. And the thing is, it's that I totally agree with you that this one-dimensional profiling causes a lot of fear, and with fear, they have an excuse to check your how do you say you have the terms. They check all your information, and they go into
right.
your background, and they know everything. And
I think you bring up a really good point, and I want to pick at that a little bit, because I don't believe in let's go get the olive skin guys, because I mean we all know you know, amongst that are going to throw in a bunch of guys from, you know, Greece, and you're going to get a bunch of, you know, some Italians. And I mean, there's no, that's not the science to this. And I don't believe that there may necessarily be one. But help me out with then, how do we do this in a way that doesn't waste a lot of time taking chapstick away from grandmothers who are flying to see their, you know, grandchildren in Boston? Yeah. I mean, how do we, I mean, what's the point of that? If we're doing that just so we don't offend, I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm with you. It's wrong to profile like that.
It totally.
But can't we
ridiculous.
Narrow it down a little bit more than just everybody yeah. on the planet?
No, you're absolutely right. And it becomes ridiculous. And the problem is, I think it's an excuse just to make people really scared. And when you have a lot of people scared, then they have an excuse to do anything they want on the terms of terrorism. And it just becomes a really nasty situation where, you know, where once again, you talked about you have the A-plus guys and the C-plus guys and the C-minus guys, but then the pragmatism, there's no pragmatism to it. And I think we have to start being more pragmatic
in
who we're profiling. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for hanging on, Hassan. And you could check the tape on this. I could be wrong. I don't think I have actually said the word Muslim or Islamic or even Middle Eastern so far in the discussion that I was presenting earlier in the hour. And because, I mean, I think we all got to look at the elephant in the room and know that to a large degree, that's what we're talking about. If we're talking about, you know, people from Pakistan. But we did say that they arrested a couple of Brits in Pakistan. We don't know what kind, we don't know what skin tone they had. We don't know whether they are converts who might have, families might have originally come from Norway. We don't know if they're blonde hair, blue eyed or what. So it is important to keep that in mind. But again, it still comes down to is what do we think we're accomplishing by this? And can I make the point is that what's to stop terrorists from swallowing balloons full of the stuff which they want to mix in flight? I don't know. I mean, to pass that through on a long flight from London to New York, not to be too graphic, but that's not that hard. So how do we do that? And just by stopping the liquids, do we think we're really going to stop the ingenuity of bringing on the liquids? Maybe the terrorists are just that dumb that they can't figure a way around that. And they just throw up their hands and go, whoops, they got us. Can't use baby formula. That'd be wrong. That wouldn't be sporting. So they just decide not to go through with it. I mean, and then at what point do you say, well, what if they eliminate the bathrooms? I really mean it. I mean, if that's a possibility of people being able to smuggle in explosives by ingesting them, then what do you do? It's the only place where you could go to mix chemicals anyway. If you're going to be mixing a bunch of chemicals sitting next to somebody, chances are they'd be aware of that. They'd be able to, you know, draw attention to that or stop you themselves like they did with the shoe bomber. But the bathroom, you'd be in there all by yourself. So could they ever be eliminating bathrooms on flights? I mean, just think about it. No drink, right? No food, no bathroom. Kind of follows. I know it seems absurd, but, you know, so did a lot of the things we've heard in the last 24 hours, you know, 3 weeks ago. We never would have thought they would have said no food on a plane, but they are. So I don't know. I throw that out there now just to go on the record. No drink, no food. Could that mean no bathrooms on the flights in the future just for security measures? Oh, and they might be able to add a few more seats, too. And with no bathrooms on a plane, how badly do you need to get, you know, to Houston when you think about it? Joe, wildcard line on Coast to Coast AM. Joe, where do you go with this subject?
Well, I'm here in Phoenix, and you mentioned ask questions for the last 4 days or the last 4 years.
Right.
I have to wonder about the last 40 years, and I don't mean to be partisan. I think we're at the mercy of the Demopublican system. When you say it's us and them, and it's information and disinformation, well, when we had the first oil crunch, it was the Saudi Arabians. I think the gentleman who was George's guest last night pointed out the real politics in the Middle East with the folks who are controlling the oil and the fear that's going on there. And then I just wanted to point out, I'm not real educated, but for a full 4 months ahead of Katrina, Popular Mechanics ran 10 disasters on Earth. They fully detailed everything that was going to happen in New Orleans. And yet nobody in FEMA, nobody in the Army Corps of Engineers, nobody picks up a simple publication by Randolph Hearst, a Hearst publication, and we
stop for a second. But we know that they got their information from reports that had been prepared for the government that said New Orleans was the likely place where something this disastrous could happen. I'd be willing to bet you dollars to donuts the source information they had wasn't something they had to generate independently. They didn't have to enterprise that information. It came from well-established government research that said how vulnerable New Orleans was and that they'd known that for years.
Okay, just amusing, and I'll get off after this last point. I just got my most recent issue of Popular Mechanics.
Yes, sir.
Above the main headline, this is September 2006, Senator John McCain takes on 9/11 conspiracy myths. Right below that, are we alone? And I thought, great, something Hoagland would like or the SETI folks would like.
Right.
It's the most benign article on both points. And since the magazine is very thin, it's just like, that's the whole front cover. Since when is that what Popular Mechanics is about?
To me, I don't know.
It's about information and disinformation, and it's about control.
Well, that's a fair point. Well, I appreciate that, Joe, and thank you. Popular Mechanics needs more evangelists like you when they do something right, and I hope you keep them in line like that when they do something wrong. International Line, Carol on Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. Carol, where are you going to go with this topic? Help me sort this out.
Well, thanks for taking my call.
I understand you're a tasty Canadian, is that right?
I'm a tasty Canadian?
Yes, where are you?
I'm in Winnipeg.
All right, very good. Glad to have you. Thank you.
Thank you. I've been listening to the previous callers, and I think what just leapt to my mind was this, and say what you want or comment, I welcome it. This is what I was thinking. Realistically, you're at war with a Middle Eastern country. Canada is now involved in Afghanistan. We've had a few soldiers die this week because of the insurgence of the Taliban. I think if we're going to get involved with these types of countries, with their history of religion, for whatever reasons, they have their extreme factions, which hopefully are not the majority of Muslims or other groups. But if this is the case, then why are the? It all goes back to what is it? And there could be many answers to this. What is it that's motivating a certain group of people to act on such a barbaric scale? Why do they hate the West so much? It all goes back to I think, answering what's motivating all of this in the first place that is so dramatically changing the lifestyle of citizens in the West. There's, I guess, you know...
And that is?
Pardon?
And that is what?
Well, obviously, the governments, well, I shouldn't even call them... The dictatorships over in the Middle East are not serving their citizens. They're unhappy. They're poor. They're not doing very
well.
Who's
poor? Who's poor?
The maybe the mass of population of the average Arab citizen or the average Iraqi citizen.
Iraqi citizen may be different here than Arab citizen in the sense certainly that, you know, Saudi Arabia, there are no poor in Saudi Arabia per se. There's no poor in Brunei, the United Arab Emirates. Most of the oil producing countries enjoy enormous prosperity. They don't know what to do with all their money. So it isn't a matter of feeding off of, you know, activating the poor to get them to do their bidding. In a lot of cases, the terrorists have all come from these very middle class backgrounds. Now, mixed in with that are some of the poor from Palestine who will go across the border and blow themselves up in Israel. But you also got a lot of college educated Palestinian kids who have done that, too. So I don't know that that's a profile of just, you know, the haves versus the have nots.
Doing this.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
That's what I'd like to throw out there, because I just don't know why there's such a desire, such a passion to to want to, I don't know, convert all of us into
yes.
Muslims? Or I just don't understand this motivation and where it's all this hatred comes from.
It's the nature of zealotry. The nature of zealotry of any type is to try to make everybody else over into our image and likeness. It's a power trip. It's a God thing where somebody who becomes fully convinced of that they are living the best life, they want everybody else to be just like them, right? They want everybody else to make the sacrifices they're making. They don't want anybody else to be doing anything differently because it highlights the fact that they are different. So that so often happens with zealots. They become so convinced that the world should be just like them, that they're willing to take these extraordinary means, including the killing of innocent lives, to justify it and to activate what they want to see out of the world. And part of that is because it gives their life meaning. And I think that if you did a profile of the average terrorist, I think you would find they, more than anybody else, from a very early age, were people who were in search of a life that was dense with meaning. They wanted to feel like they had an impact, like they were a celebrity, like they mattered. And that seems like that's why they tape themselves and their statements that they're going to make, because they want to be immortalized afterward. And that's what it's all about. The terrorists who make their videotapes before they go blow themselves up are no different to me than Dylan Klebold and Eric Harris and Columbine. You know, it's all about a grab for fame. It's about immortality in a very twisted way. And this is what they feel will define both their family's legacy and solidify their place in heaven. And that sort of twisted theology has always existed, even amongst atheists. And the same thing was believed by people who were in so-called godless communism. They wanted the same type of immortality for themselves and were willing to kill other people to get it. Let's go to Mike on the wildcard line on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Mike, we're just trying to sort out these headlines. I really want to get back to this whole, all these weird security wrinkles. What does this all mean to you, Mike?
Well, Ian, I'm in Ocean Beach, San Diego, and I had thoughts like, do we want security forces to feel 100% sure that they got all the bad guys? They didn't miss one guy. And it's sort of like a bomb du jour kind of thing, where the bomb du jour of this month was liquids. On 9/11, the bomb du jour were airplanes, and our reaction there was to bring all the airplanes down, remove all the potential bombs.
True.
So as far as the inconveniences and things we're having to go to, we have to feel it out. We have to make adjustments.
Okay. I got a question for you. And it's just a question. We know that the plot was to mix liquids, right, on board these planes and then ignite them with a flash camera to use the flash of the bulb as the detonator, right?
Right.
That's what they said. So how come you can still bring a flash camera onto a plane, but you can't bring a bag of Fritos?
Well, if the Fritos bag were sealed, then
can't bring it on. Can't bring it on the Fritos. Doesn't matter whether you bought the Fritos 4 steps from the plane, but you can bring on a flash camera, and that was going to be used as a detonator.
I'm surprised they would allow a flash camera.
There you go.
Yeah, I would really think that would be not allowed also.
There you go. Isn't that weird? Bring a flash camera on the plane, even though that was specified as being part of the plot. Food, a ho-ho was never mentioned. Sneak a ho-ho on a plane and you're going to end up in, you know, some sort of detention cell somewhere. And yet you can bring a flash camera on. Go figure it. I mean, this is part of what I'm getting at. And why you all are so smart to help us try and sort it out coming up. We'll get more to your open line calls on the way, and we'll give you all the numbers you need to join the conversation on Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. In for George, this is Ian Punnett.